I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics. Politics. Humor. Humor. Tequila. Tequila. And an IQ of under 64.
Yeah.
You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Art Cop Radio, show number 105. My name's Bart. I'm driving the barge this week. And by the way, Art Cop is heard on the Art Cop Radio networks, and Art Cop is seen on the artcop.com. Oh, big, big show today. We actually had to trim something off. You know, I've been giving away some free radio subscriptions to some people. Some people write in and ask me, what the hell is your deal, Bart? So I said, well, tell you what, I'm going to give you like 2 weeks or 30 days free of Bark Up Radio because I'm going to answer your questions in the next radio show. Well, next radio show, this one, ran long. So I thought I'd take out the part that I told people to watch for and put it on the page so everybody could see it. So maybe it would cut through some confusion and maybe shorten the debate, we'll say. But since the show runs long, let's get right to the Chinako so we can get started. I could taste the mongoose on that one. That was good. Okay, no time to waste. Got to get to the big, big show.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Got a letter about the minimum wage I'd like to read to you before I comment on it. You can tell I got the paper in my hand. Wage Truths, it's called. That would be opposed to the vicious GOP wage lies. It always amazes me when I see pundits, letters to the editor, or any of those so-called free market thinkers trying to justify reasons not to raise the minimum wage, i.e. David McGee. David McGee must be a hand job who wrote in previously. He uses the argument of supply and demand, but fails to mention some of the most compelling reasons for doing just the opposite. Not paying workers a living wage is immoral. That being said, let's look at some truths regarding minimum wage. We're only going to look at one. Number one, adjusting for inflation, minimum wage today is $3.60 an hour. Now, isn't that a goddamn shame? $3.60 an hour. You can't buy shit for $3.60 an hour. And I'll tell you what pisses me off. Last time they changed the minimum wage was like in 95 or 96, somewhere near when Clinton was in. And what they do, though, about a mile from old Casa de Bart, there's what they call the backyard burger. Now, I really like their burgers. They're charbroiled and et cetera, they're really nice little burger. But the best thing about it, I mean, it's a real nice tasting burger, but the best thing about it, apparently I'm the only one in Tulsa that likes it because there's never anybody in line. Swear to God, don't know if I mentioned to you before, you go to McDonald's 3:30 in the morning. There's 9, 12, 15, 25, 40, 85, 200, 300 people in line just in the drive-in. And I'm like, WTF? Same for Arby's. Same for Burger King. Same for any place you go, any drive-in in Tulsa. Tulsa is the drive-in king, and it's also the convenience store king. I remember when we were in D.C. for the fest in 2002, we drove for 45 minutes looking for a convenience store. We needed something. We needed, I don't know, like a phone, or we just needed something. And we thought, well, we'll just surely at the next corner there'll be a convenience store, and we'll just jump in and, you know, get whatever it was we needed. No, they don't have those in D.C. Maybe somewhere in D.C. they do, but oh boy, in Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, on one corner you got a Ginko here, you got a 7-Up here, or a 7-Eleven here, you got a Quick Trip over here, and you got a they got a Come and Go. It's spelled K-U-M. It looks a little weird, but yeah. Fast food nation, convenience store nation, but at the damn fast food, this backyard burger is really good. Never a line, so I like to go there. Moved into Casa de Bart, cheeseburger at this place, $4 with tax. So it was, you know, $3.69 or something. A little bit of tax came out to $4. I went there the other day. Cheeseburger, cheeseburger. Guy tells me it'd be $4.29. I'm going, WTF? $4.29, what is that? Oh, price went up. And I'm thinking, were you bastards? Did everybody get a raise? Yes. Why did the price go up? Well, cost of beef goes up. Cost of cheese goes up. Cost of buns goes up. Cost of everything goes up. And how much did the wages go up? Not. We fuck the workers. That's how American business is. Fuck the workers. They don't like it. We'll get somebody else. That's how it works. But when this guy says, right now, if you count inflation, minimum wage is $3.60 an hour, that's true. Every time, no, every year, your fast food place, just as an example, because I say, the only reason I bring this up is because it was $4 exactly. I could give them a five, get one back, boom, I'm done. I'm a busy man, I got shit to do. I ain't got time to have you sitting there counting out 14, 15, no. Boom, I'm gone, I got shit to do. So when it went from $4 to $4.29, I thought, well, you know, I understand that shit goes up in price, but you didn't give a piece of that to the worker. You told him, no, minimum wage $5.50. You don't like it, go to hell. It pisses me off. And typical Democrats, they said, we're going to push through this minimum wage. And the Republicans said, no, you're not. If we can't give Bill Gates a big giant-ass tax break, nobody's getting nothing. They said, oh, okay, we're sorry. Ugh. How did I get in this party? Letter to the editor. The right person has not emerged. I can't vote for Hillary for president. She signed on to the invasion and occupation of Iraq, even though she had access to intelligence arguing against the action and scholarly warnings, not sure who that includes, predicting the outcome. This is written by my buddy Neil in Vermont. No, this is Leslie Rowe in Turntum, or maybe it's Tumtum. Can't read, I'm old, my eyes don't. Tumtum, Washington. Hi, I'm mayor of Tumtum. Or it could be Turntum, but I think it's Tumtum. This lady and Neil are the only two people I know of that say that Hillary had access to all the real intelligence back at the time. She showed extremely poor judgment and political calculation. Her Iraq policy up to now has been complacency, with a few carefully crafted statements regarding the disastrous mess. So she's against the war, I'm guessing. Now Clinton has decided it's in her best interest to suddenly show some leadership. Her well-publicized trip to the war zone and subsequent interviews were an obvious lead-up to her announcement that she'll seek the presidency. Well, Leslie Rowe at Tumtum, Washington. Looks like you don't read the old buttcup.com. But I told you this is coming. It was damn obvious. And we'll do it real quick, but as a freshman senator, she's got no reason to jump into the spotlight screaming, me, me, me. I got all the answers. Listen to me. I know what I'm doing. I might be the first day on the job, but I got everybody figured out, and I know exactly what to do. And all you sons of bitches been here for 50 years, shut up and listen to me because I know what I'm doing. Yeah, that would have worked real well with the American Whore Press. But the minute she got past her freshman status, boom. What was it? Not even 30 days. The new Congress went in January 4th or 7th. 2 weeks maybe out of her freshman status zone, she launched the attack. And this lady ain't putting up with it. Nope. Her actions offend me. Iraq is a frightening dark cloud that hangs over my family life as it does for so many others. My beloved nephew and his wife were sent to fight this war in 2005. My nephew went back for a second tour in October 2006. Clinton didn't stand up to this administration. Well, that may be true, but did Dodd, did Kerry, did Biden, did Feingold, did any of these guys that have been there, not Feingold, but some of these guys been in the Senate 30, 40 years, seems like Kennedy's been a senator, they've been in there 30 years, and it wasn't their place to speak up? No, 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 they remain quiet. The freshman, the new girl, she should have been the one to pop her head up and get all the attention. Not Granddad, not Robert Byrd, who's been here since before World War II. No, no, no reason he should speak up. It's Hillary's place to speak up. That uppity woman, the carpetbagger from Arkansas, she's the one that should have stood up. Now, when she needs a stage to satisfy her personal ambitions, she uses Iraq as her backdrop to kick off her campaign. It is a shameful and disingenuous act. So, Hillary's in trouble for not speaking up. And now when she is speaking up, is only a stage to satisfy her personal ambition, using the rag as her backdrop, kicking for a campaign, shameful and disingenuous. So it's wrong to be quiet, wrong to speak up. Hard to win with Leslie Rowe at Tum Tum Washington. One more paragraph. As a Democrat, I will not vote for any candidate who agreed to invade Iraq. Well, lady, you just voted for McCain. You just voted for more war, for more blood, for more invasions to invade Iran. That's what you just voted for, lady. I am looking for a candidate who always knew invading Iraq was a disastrous mistake, as I did. Aha. I get a lot of these. I get a whole lot of mail like this. I knew for a fact I would bet my kids' lives in a heartbeat that there was not any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq anywhere. Everybody knew it. It was so totally obvious and completely and totally 100% bet my kids obvious. Everybody knew it. Everybody. I want a president who has demonstrated staunch leadership and speaking out beforehand, and who has continually offered sage advice. Well, no, there are no Democrats. A 1 in a billion chance of being elected president. Name an elected Democrat who's been speaking out loudly and forcefully against this war from the beginning. You might say Feingold, but yeah, do one of those searches. See how many times Feingold's raised his voice in the last 4 years. He might have raised it. I'm not saying he didn't. But how many times did Feingold get on Meet the President and say, God damn it, I'm tired of this bloodshed. We got to stop it now. How many times has he done that? Ever? Or did he issue a policy statement? I think this is a mistake. Now watch this drive. My candidate must have the qualifications to repair the damage done by this administration. Bring our young folks home as soon and safely as possible. Well, you don't want that candidate. My candidate will put this country and its needs first. That candidate is out there, and I'm waiting. Leslie, Roe, and Tum Tum, you be waiting. And in 2007, you be waiting. And in 2008, you be waiting. Because guess what? Dennis Kucinich is not going to be president. Howard Dean is not going to be president, not in 08. Any candidate who's a forceful, peaceful guy, Leslie, I think you got a long wait. If you're waiting for that forceful Democrat who's always been against the war and always spoke up about it constantly, forcefully, loudly for the last 4 years, you keep waiting, Leslie. Good luck to you there. Now, here's someone who hates Hillary less. 8 years of Hillary, it's called. Oh, half my audience just fainted. It's okay. I'll get a cool towel. Hillary Clinton was raised in a suburb of Chicago. She knows the Midwest. Clinton was the first lady of Arkansas for 12 years. She knows the South. She's Senator Clinton of New York. She knows the Northeast. California, Oregon, and Washington usually go Democratic in the presidential race. And a huge number of Republican women will vote for Clinton because she is one of them. Take the word huge out of there, and I'll probably agree with you. Get ready for 8 years of Hillary. Bob Munson, Newberry Park, California. As we've told you many times, nobody else will say this. I haven't heard anybody else say this but me. Pickles is pro-choice. The twins are pro-choice, and even that monster Barbara Bush is pro-choice. Makes me think, I'm not saying those four women, but if you're a Republican woman who's pro-choice, I'm rubbing my chin here, you just might be voting for a Democrat if she's a woman. It would be my guess women are real tired of having these old fat white men in their 60s and 70s explaining their reproductive options to them. I just have a sneaky suspicion that women would like to have the control over their own bodies, and they don't want people like Jim Inhofe and Jesse Helms and that type making their reproductive decisions for them. So in that regard, I think Hillary is going to pick up some Republican votes. I don't think it's going to be huge. But as Dick Morris said, all Hillary has to do, Hillary's going to pick up, he either said 8 or 16 million votes because she's a woman. And right there, what, Kerry lost by 2 million or 500,000 or something in 04. If Hillary picks up 8 or 12 or something million votes just because she's a woman, I think we might have a victory on her hands. there is no shortage of really horrific, monstrously, unbelievably bad stories come out of Iraq. One of them caught my eye because it pissed me off because they knew, they saw it coming. Headline, Army knew accused soldier, quote, homicidal. Fort Campbell, Kentucky. An Army private charged with the slaughter of an Iraqi family was diagnosed as a homicidal threat by a military mental health team 3 months before the attack. Now that one paragraph kind of tells you everything. They knew that this guy had a hair trigger and was violent and everything else, and they said, that's okay. We need you to get back in there and fight. And he snapped, killed an entire family, and now he's going on trial for murder. And I know a lot of you hardcores out there, all the soldiers are bad. All of them want to kill. Oh, they all signed up just so they can murder the ragheads. You know, yes, there must be some of that in the Army. But this, from one paragraph, that's all I know about this guy. What I read, when I saw Army knew accused soldier homicidal, I circled it, and I read the first paragraph for the first time right now. That's just so fucking sad. The Iraqi family's dead. This guy's life is ruined. Bush didn't do his job. The Congress didn't do their job. This mental health team didn't do their job. Nobody did their job. You got a bunch of dead people and a bunch of ruined lives because nobody would do their job. Private First Class Stephen Green was found of homicidal ideations. The fuck is that? Homicidal ideations? Is there some letters missing? And it's idea with a T-I-O-N-S on the end of it. You don't have to make up new words. He was homicidal, okay? After seeking help from an Army combat stress team in Iraq. So the guy even did the right thing. He feels himself slipping off the edge. Maybe, I don't know, shot some dogs, shot at some people, and thought, hey, I'm going nuts here. I better go talk to somebody. So he goes and talks to the mental health team. Green said he was angry about the war, desperate to avenge the death of comrades, and driven to kill Iraqi citizens, according to an investigation by the Associated Press. Wait, they actually investigated something? The Associated Press? The treatment was several small doses of Seroquel, a drug to regulate his mood, and a directive to get some sleep. Oh, God, it's not funny. But shake it off, soldier. Get a little shut-eye. We're going to kill some Iraqis in the morning. The next day, he returned to duty. So he showed up and said, I want to kill. I want to kill. I want to kill. I want to kill. And they said, here's some Seroquel. Get some sleep. We'll kill something in the morning. On March 12, 2006, Iraqi police reported a break-in at the home of a family in Mamouja, about 20 miles from Baghdad. You know, whenever I see that in a story on the page, I always take that out. You know, I say, oh, there was an explosion today about 18.4 miles north-northwest of Baghdad. Who cares? Near Baghdad. What do we in Tulsa or Poughkeepsie or North Mohmont, Montana, why do we care if it's 18 miles or 20 miles, or northwest or southeast? Another ship blew up in Iraq. The intruders shot and killed the father, mother, the two young daughters. The older girl was raped and her body set on fire. Oh, it's that one. The carnage first was assumed to be the work of insurgents. Oh, yeah. The insurgents did it. They stole the oil, too. That changed in late June when two members of Green's unit voiced suspicions and soldiers were involved in the killings. Now the Army believes Green and four of the soldiers are responsible. If the charges are true, the attack would be among the most horrific instances of criminal behavior by American troops in the war. But isn't this guy legally insane? I think the I was insane at the time defense probably should be used more often, especially if you're in combat, stressed out, tried to get help, and they told you to shake it off. Rub some dirt on it. That'll go away. And this Private Stephen Green, he might be every bad adjective you can think of to apply to a racist bastard, Republican, fascist bastard. Double bastard for this guy. But then again, if he wasn't in Iraq, he wouldn't be under all this stress. He even went to him and said, I need help. And they said, basically, get back out there. Because they're short. Because Bush has got an unpopular war that nobody wants anything to do with. And they won't let these guys go home. Jim Webb, he's got a son over in Baghdad who barely, remember you heard about that one where Bush came up to Webb and said, hey, how's your boy? And he said, he wants to come home. I didn't ask you that. How's your boy? He said, hey, fuck you, asshole. Well, no, he didn't exactly, but he said, that's between me and my boy, Mr. President, and walked off and it turned into a thing. Well, he's been near death twice. I think one was a sniper, one was an IED. And as of, I think, Monday, he got stop lost. What is that like? I think most people can get through almost anything if they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. If you put in prison for 30 years, you ain't going to make it. But if you get put in prison for 90 days, you know, and you can see that 90, you can maybe work through that 90. Think what it's like to be in Iraq. You lost your buddies. You might have a bullet hole or so into you. But you got these people who've been wounded. Think what it's like every time they talk to their wife. You know, she's crying. Be safe. Be safe. And you think, oh, shit. You know, I just got to get through another 2 more months. Then I got to get through just 1 more month. I just got to get through 2 more weeks. And here it comes a couple days before you're going home. And they say, you ain't going home. You're staying here. Instead of going home in January, next target date is May. You think, oh, fuck. Think what that's like to be told, you're not going home. You're staying here. And for all the guys know, in May, they're going to say, sorry, you're not going home again. Now, maybe Christmas. What is that like? What does that do to your brain when you just want to get the fuck out no matter what? And here's this Private Green. It's almost like, see, I told you I was stressed out. You didn't believe me. Now, do you believe me? And again, he could be the bad guy. I don't know. I'm just saying that when you go to ask for help, it would be my guess if your platoon buddies find out that you went and talked to a mental health guy, then you're the big pussy. I'll bet you that's where I'll bet they start yelling pink tutu at you. Sissy boy, you know, like, you're Mr. Fag now and you can't take it and come on, time to buck up. Odds are he knew that that's what he was going to be in for if he asked for help. And he went and asked for help anyway. And I, you know, it's a little like, did you know there's a, hadn't heard much about it lately, but there's a guy running around Houston raping men. And they say the men don't report the rapes. Who wants to call 911? Oh, I've been raped. You know, they just don't want to do it. So they've got a handful of rapes, but they don't know. It could be 10, could be 50, could be 300. They just don't know because men aren't going to go ask for help or they're not going to report a sexual kind of problem, medical kind of situation. So anyway, just rambling on now, but maybe this guy's a good guy, maybe he's not. But he asked for help. Everybody let him down. And the poor dead family. Yeah, that's sad enough for this guy. They murdered the family, raped the daughter, set her on fire. Jeez, thanks, George. Thanks for freeing us. Thanks for showing up to save us from Saddam, George. As regular readers and listeners know, I claim I have an IQ of 64, but actually I have a doctorate in finance. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Bush's claim that the budget is balanced. Of course, he's lying. He's never told the truth, ever. In a State of the Union address, Bush is expected to call for a balanced budget by 2012. In other words, after turning the Clinton-era surpluses, oh, get it, it's the Clinton-era surpluses. It's not Clinton's surplus. It's a surplus that accidentally fell out of the sky while Clinton was behind the Oval Office. Ah, now we see. Now we see. Now that makes sense. The Clinton-era surplus is into 6 straight years of deficit and putting the nation almost $3 trillion deeper into debt. He now wants to see the budget balance after he leaves office, just as the demographic tidal wave of baby boomer retirements begins to inundate the federal ledgers in red ink. Calls party poopers, but it hardly seems reason to break out the champagne, says U.S. Whore Today in an editorial. Mustering the political will to fix the problem, he is not scaling back his tax cuts, he is not prepping the nation for the tough choices that lie ahead or making any himself. In fact, he's not expected to offer any specifics tonight. He never has. You've never in your life heard Bush offer a specific because he can't. All he can say is, tax cutting, good. War, good. Democrat, bad. That's all he can relate to you. He can't say, remember how Clinton could say, well, the first 22,000 we're going to put here at a 14%, and then the next 16,000 we put over here at 19%. That was the difference. Clinton had a brain. He could explain things. With Bush, it's always generalities. We'll get to the details later, and then they just screw you. If he said it was 4, it turns out to be 22. In reality, Bush's call is little more than an observation. If the economy continues to grow, if spending in Iraq begins to wind down, if the nation averts the next Katrina or 9/11, then presto, the budget will drift towards the break-even point with only modest fiscal restraint, most of which would fall to the next president and future Congresses. But the surplus's destiny approach has a big problem. Bush's break-even point comes about the time baby boomers start to retire in droves. Well, that looks like a Mel Brooks tribute there. Their retirement, combined with surging health care costs and increasing life expectancies, will push spending on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security off the charts. Are you ready? Already, those programs amount for 40% of all government spending already. You've heard me say before that General Motors spends more on health care per car than they do on steel. We're already spending 40% of our money on health care. And nobody else. Wild figure. I'll bet France is spending 50%. I'll bet Germany is spending 18%. I'll bet any other country in this world, they have universal coverage. Just like insurance, that's what insurance is. It covers everybody. And so if one guy has a heart attack that's $300,000 for a surgery, it doesn't wipe out him and everyone he knows. You spread that around to the young and the healthy and the whatever, and you work together towards a better everything for everybody. But no. That's socialism. Can't do that. Bush is proposing this big-ass pack of lies. U.S. Whore Today allegedly calls him on it. But now we got a guy named Rob Portman at the Office of Management and Budget Director. He's about to lie to us. Big headline. Deficit halved, H-A-L-V-E-D, 2 years early. 3 years ago, skeptics scoffed. Now they're eating crow. Can you believe this son of a bitch? The size of the Bush surplus is so staggering that all the critics are having to eat crow now. 3 years ago, Bush established the goal of cutting the federal budget deficit in half in 5 years without raising taxes. Okay, so 3 years ago, he proposed cutting it in half by 5 years. At the same time, many, including U.S. Whore Today, expressed skepticism, but it was achieved last year, 3 years ahead of schedule. Hello? We cut the federal budget in half already? Flag. You know, that's something that we do sometimes around the house. We're watching a football game or something. I keep a little flag in my pocket or, you know, on my lap. And when I see some holding, I throw the flag. That's what these people need to do. They should just sit there. That's what they ought to do. Oh, it's too late to get it done tonight. But every Democrat that listens to the monkey lie tonight at the State of the Union, they ought to all have yellow flags. And whenever he says something like, we're winning in Iraq, they all throw the yellow flag. Flag. Penalty, liar. That'd be so cool, but no, they don't listen to me. Now is the time to build on that success. Oh, yeah. Let's build on the monkey's success at cutting the budget. What year is this newspaper? Is this year 2044? On February 5th, the president will post a customary five-year budget showing declining deficits every year and a surplus in 2012. Notice how it's going to get real good after he's gone. That's a lot like being religious. Tell you what, give me 10% of your money your whole life, and after you die, I'll give you your reward. Well, no, asshole. Why don't you give me my reward now while I'm alive? Don't promise me 72 virgins. We all think that's stupid, remember? Oh. Getting to balance requires. Again, who wrote this? I mean, I know it's Rob Portman, but getting to balance requires both keeping the economy strong and keeping federal spending under control. You did not say that. You did not say we need to keep federal spending under control. You did not say that. Bush has spent more than every president combined, and you're telling us that we need to get spending under control. Well, tell your monkey to knock it off. Key to the first is continuing pro-growth policies, including tax relief. Oh, yeah, that's key. Nothing balances a budget faster than giving the super rich a shitload of money. What could balance it faster? You know, Clinton showed you how to balance a budget, and he didn't have to talk about all the years after he left office for to see some results that have helped fuel our robust economy. So, key to the first, his last paragraph started off, getting to balance requires X. Key to the first is continuing pro-growth policies, tax relief, that have helped fuel the robust economy since the president's tax relief became fully effective in 2003. We've seen a dramatic increase in business investment, more than 7 million new jobs. Oh, yeah, Clinton had 24 million. You've got 7, and that's a claim, not a proven fact. and higher wages for American workers? Objection! That didn't happen. If the CEO gets $30 or $40 million as a severance package, that is not higher wages for the workers. The stronger economy has also generated record revenues over the past 2 years. Oh, we're just drowning in black ink. Oh, I know. How about a tax cut? Because we got too much money. We're all drowning. Too much money. Help, help. I'm trying to breathe. I can't. There's so many $100 bills in my mouth. Rob Portman, I could debate you live in front of a big audience and smoke your ass, and I can barely spell economy. You just sit there and lie one after another, lie. And it gets back to the old thing. Well, you say Lincoln's dead. I say he's not. We each have a point of view. No, Lincoln's dead, asshole. You don't get your point of view on that. But as long as the Democrats and the press lay down and let them lie, they're going to continue. Why would they not? When I used to go to the courthouse a lot, when I was working for the finance company, I don't know why this is, but I got nothing against the blind, but they had a blind guy that ran the concession stand. And so you'd go up and get your popcorn or your drink or something, and you'd hand him a dollar, or you'd hand him a bill and say, that's a five or that's a ten. So he would take your money, and I don't know how he made change. If you can walk up to the guy every day and hand him a dollar bill and say, that's a hundred, can I get my $98 change and my Coke and my chips? And no one ever stops you. Human nature, you're probably going to keep doing that every day. That's what we got here. The Bush administration every day puts in a dollar and says, that's a hundred. I need my change. And we give him $98, and the Democrats in the press dinner say, oh, that's right. That was a hundred, just like he said. If we can only get someone to fight back, if we can only get someone to list the facts. No, that's a dollar bill. You thieving bastard. You've been in here four times this week. You've stolen $400 from this poor blind man. You son of a bitch. And I'm here to call you on it. Don't you dare try that shit again. And I want you to repay him inside the next 5 minutes or you're going to jail. That's how these sons of bitches should be handled. But no. Here's a letter. Probably won't mean as much to you as it means to me because I live in Oklahoma. You see, the Rocky Mountains forms a conspiracy with the Canadian cold air and the Gulf of Mexico and the warm air is shooting over from Africa over the Atlantic. And when the cool air rushes down off the mountains and it runs into that hot, moist air coming up from New Orleans, it creates what we'd like to call Tornado Alley. Yeah, Tornado Alley, it runs right up Highway 44. You ever see Interstate 44? Well, I guess actually it starts in Wichita Falls, Texas, and it goes up through Anadarko. I know you're familiar with that. And then up through Lawton, and then hits Oklahoma City, then goes through Tulsa, Joplin, Springfield, St. Louis, on up and then causes trouble in Illinois and Indiana. But we have lots of tornadoes here. Odd as it sounds, the best weather people in the whole world are in Oklahoma City and in Tulsa, because this is it. You know, that's why they made the Twister movie in Oklahoma. If you want some Twisters, these mile-wide black things that just eat everything in its path, you move to Oklahoma. If you want to be the best damn weatherman in the history of the world, you're either in Oklahoma City or you're in Tulsa, because this is where it happens. Letter to the editor, Weather Overkill. Endless banner crawls, weather map overlays, warnings, seemingly endless cut-ins by minimum wage weekend warriors. Haven't we had enough of the sensationalism and mediocrity that characterizes the local news and weather broadcast Yes! Yes! Oh, I've never seen so much truth put in one damn paragraph in my life. Hell, that's one damn sentence. It's gotten to the point where you can barely see the program content any longer for all the clutter that those purveyors of gloom and doom fill the screen with. He is so right. If Gus thinks he saw a woodchuck in the clouds, they shut off programming. A cloud's been sighted 40 miles northwest of Ponca City. We're going to keep you updated. Oh, here's another update. The cloud has moved 100 feet. Oh, well, here's another update. The cloud has now moved 200 feet. It's a cloud on the move. And it may not be coming our way, but a wind direction could send that cloud this way. And you know what a cloud is? Cloud could bring rain. Rain could bring change of temperature. Could create an updraft, which when combined with the spin of the rotation of the Earth, could create a tornado, and then where would you be? What, God forbid, did the early pioneers do for several hundred years when they didn't have Fox News to keep them safe and solve their problems? I actually heard one local reporter, in quotes, proclaim, "Do not leave your home under any circumstances during the severe, deadly, and destructive ice storms," followed by, "Be sure to leave plenty of extra time before heading out of your house this weekend." You know, all right, something else that makes me mad, piss me off. It is so stupid. Well, a couple things. It's so stupid all this time. I mean, you know how everything gets so smarter. You know, Bush doesn't ride around in a convertible anymore because they learned bad things can happen. You know, as time goes by, they're supposed to get smarter. What they need to do, someone at the mayor's office, the mayor or the governor, whatever, needs to coordinate with the weather people, and they need to label it. They say this is a class one storm, for instance, or, you know, red alert storm, whatever you want to call it. That means unless you're a doctor or a nurse or some quick trip employee, you know, somebody who's really, really got to be at work, then you stay home. If you work at an auto parts store and it's a class one storm or a red, whatever you call it, a red ball storm, you don't go to work that day. But no, they don't say that. They say, we've got 4 inches of solid ice outside. We've got a record number of wrecks all over the state. It's almost impossible to move wherever you go. It's just solid ice. It's not even snow. Talked about this last show or the last two shows. But it was just total ice everywhere. But your piece of shit boss says, you get in here. If you're late, if you don't make it, you just don't ever come back to work. You know, and you got some piece of crap job that you just got a petty boss that just, he didn't have the brains to realize he could save a little salary by letting you have the day off. No, you've got to be there. But if the mayor were to say, it's a class one storm, don't leave your home. No, see, that would mean something. Then you could tell your boss, the mayor said not to leave the house. But no, they don't do that. They say, it is very, very, very treacherous out there. Wrecks everywhere. Police don't even respond to any more wrecks because there are just so many that can't do it. If you're in a wreck, try to get the other guy's name and try to make it home. And we're just doing the best we can. And then your piece of shit boss, you've got to come to work. Well, no, hey, screw you. It would just be so easy. Instead of saying, it's terrible, 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 don't go out. Well, I have to, because I got a piece of shit boss. They could just move it into an official thing. But no, they refuse to do that. And there's no logical reason why they do that, other than, I guess, the business leaders donate money to the bastards' campaigns, and they don't want to piss them off. Just seems like in the middle of an ice storm, a severe ice storm, we for several days the whole town was shut down, and it just makes no sense. Force these people in Oklahoma. See, now something else in Chicago, Philly, Detroit, Minneapolis, Boston, those kinds of places, you guys know what to do with snow and ice. When I was a kid, they had snow tires with steel studs on them. That's how you got through the snow and the ice. But in Oklahoma, they don't have anything like that. People in Oklahoma, they don't have snow tires. They don't have studded tires. They don't have nothing. They got plenty of SUVs. That's all they got in the city. If it rains here, they close schools. So you can imagine what happens if it snows. Oh, my God. I think I see snow. Close the schools. Close all the schools. Every damn school. Close them all. And that brings me to my second bit. It's 2007, people. We're sitting there trying to watch a little TV, you know, and they have the endless first. The left fourth of the screen has got a bunch of funny smiley faces on snowflakes. Then the bottom fourth of the screen has got the crawl that says Mary's dance classes is closed. Bob's karate class is closed. And what was that one I told you? I can't remember the the cowboy, the Get Cowboy Church or something is closed. Tell you what, if you're thinking about going to church tonight, go to the church's website and see if they're open. If that doesn't work, call a friend. But the idea that they have to monkey up the picture for days and days and days, you know, you're trying to watch a show like 24, let's say. Oh, it's so pounding and, you know, the tension and it's so tense and the ratcheting and the pounding and all that. But meanwhile, they're running Mary's Daycare's closed. We Folk Daycare Center's closed. And they've only got 30 or 40,000 of these sons of bitches to run. So, and they obviously not in alphabetical order. No, that would make some sense. Because if you're looking to find out if Tom's is open and they're still at Goober's, then you know it's going to be a while. You can go do some shit and come back. But no, they want you to watch. So they put them out of order. Sons of bitches. What's wrong? So, yeah, we should be past all that stuff about are you open or closed. Well, don't look at your TV. Go to your damn internet. Make a phone call. I just hate that. Let's just get real and call this what it is. The local TV affiliates know they have a captive audience during such weather events. What better way to pad their ratings and bombard us with more needless and mindless self-promotion? Jerry Hawkins, Broken Arrow, he is right. I want to buy him a steak. The other thing they do, you know, some damn storm moves through Tulsa, and you don't have a map in front of you, but and it moves down, say, towards Fort Smith. So they still got to break in every 3 minutes and say, oh, the storm's going to Fort Smith. It's near Fort Smith. Oh, my God, the storm is near Fort Smith. Well, hey, guess what, asshole? They got TV networks in Fort Smith. They don't need our help. When the storm's approaching Joplin, they got TV networks in Joplin. They got NBC, they got Fox, they got CBS, they got ABC. They don't need Tulsa. If you're in Joplin and you're going through a storm, you turn on the goddamn Joplin channel. Here they are in Tulsa screaming, oh, Fort Smith, oh, Joplin, oh, it's so bad. And not that they got anything against Kansas, but they break into my programming to tell me there's a problem in Kansas. Hey, F them. I'm sorry, but it's Kansas. If you're in Kansas and you got a problem, turn on your Kansas City station. I don't want to hear about it. The only time I want to be bothered, when the tornado is coming up my street, then turn on your damn sirens. Other than that, get the hell away from me. Last thing, we'll close out. Oh, I wonder how many diskers this show's going to be. On the weather, it is so stupid. They set aside a certain amount of time every newscast for the weather. And there's no reason for that. It is just stupid. They do that because we've always done it that way. The first guy to change it is going to be the genius. Like I keep saying, the first Republican to come out and say this war is stupid, I guess Hegel was the first one, he's going to be the genius. And all it takes is a little damn common sense. But with the weather in Oklahoma, from like June till the end of September, it's 100 degrees every day, no wind, stifling hot. And so when the time for the weather comes on, they should just say, just like yesterday, more shit, and it'll be that way again tomorrow. Back to you, Bob. That's all they need. But no, they tell you, oh, it's 104 in Tulsa, and it's 105 in Bixby, and it's 103 in Bartlesville, and it's 104 in Sand Springs. Who gives a fuck? Who cares if it's a degree higher here or there? Now, if it's 35 in Bartlesville and it's 55 in Tulsa and 85 in Bixby, I might want to know about it because that's some sincere shit running through town. But no, if it's 52 here and it's 53 over there, I don't care. That means it's in the low 50s and I'm a busy man. I got shit to do. Get away from me. How I got to be the smartest man in Oklahoma. Thought this might be kind of fun. There's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 newspapers or institutions, if you will, who had an opinion on Bush's State of the Horror speech. We will look at three of them. The Atlanta Journal, the Atlanta Journal Constitution. And I don't know much about them. I assume they're a horror paper. Why? Because they're in business. That's a big business. So the job's to lie to you. Another one is Investor's Investor's Business Daily, which has horror written all over it. Investor's Horror Daily, okay. Then there's Robert Novak, Prince of Darkness, who, of course, will tell the truth. Start with the Atlanta Journal Constipation. In an editorial by Mike King, unfortunately, Bush remains mired in the same old conservative dogma that's kept this country from universal health coverage for 40 years. The idea that the free market can take care of everybody if it is left to work on its own blows donkey. I added the blows donkey part. The proposal is fundamentally flawed because it treats health care as a commodity that is best sold on the open market with minimal government involvement. It flies in the face of decades of evidence to the contrary. There are large segments of the population who are purposely shut out of the market because there is no profit in covering them. Bingo. Wish I had a little bell like in Randy Rose. Ding, 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 ding. He told the truth. And now the other side of that coin, investors hoard daily. Listen to this load of crap. When asked what his strategy was for dealing with the Soviet Union, Reagan said, "We win, they lose." Now that's classic Reagan. Reagan, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but Reagan was smarter than Bush. Reagan could remember more words than Bush can. But it's always in their best interest. And they say, "Sir, can you explain your complex situation about how you're going to deal with the Russians and make the world safe and such and such?" "We win, they lose, that's how." See, now he remembered that. "We win, they lose." That's the kind of thing where a Reagan or a Bush can actually keep those four words. If you can keep those four words connected in your head, someone asks you a question, "We win, they lose." Then, yeah, he's a great man with big ideas. And he knows what he's doing. He's a man's man. And Reagan. President Bush, noting in his State of the Union lie that the consequences of failure would be grievous. I'll bet he said grievous. I swear to God, I'll bet money. Who's got 10 bucks? Who's got a copy of the speech? I'll bet he said grievous. Failure would be grievous and far-reaching. Presented a similar plan. Victory isn't a word you find in the Democratic lexicon these days. Well, unless you talk about elections, then you find it. And it wasn't in the Democratic response by Jim Webb of Virginia. For the Democrats, it's about ending the war in Iraq, not winning it. Well, now what does that mean? How many years of a quagmire is a good thing? Investor hoard daily? Again, they don't have the courage to sign editorial. They just blame it on the business. Webb didn't mention Somalia. Why should he? Listen to this. Listen to this. Prepare. Language alert. Language alert. Webb didn't mention Somalia, where the withdrawal of U.S. forces by Hillary Clinton's husband. Not only is he Bill Clinton, he's Hillary's husband, Bill Clinton. Oh, God. Does it get any worse? Webb didn't mention Somalia, where the withdrawal of U.S. forces by Hillary Clinton's husband had grievous and far-reaching consequences. Osama bin Laden saw it as confirmation of American weakness as he planned 9/11. How would abandoning Iraq be perceived? Objection! Recently on the page, Cheney's daughter wrote some weird-ass editorial. Robert Perry pulled it apart. She said, "If you don't believe me, just ask Al-Qaeda." Sometimes, when they want to bolster their lies, they say, "Well, let's, don't take it from me. Let's listen to what Osama said." All right, but if you're going to do that, then that means what Osama says counts. You can't cherry-pick your Osama snippets. And what Osama said all these 20 years is he learned that the Americans were weak when they pulled out of Lebanon, and that was under Reagan. Mr. We Win, You Lose, Reagan, the idiot, the Joint Chief said, "Don't put those soldiers on the land. We can protect them on ships, but we can't protect them on land." And Reagan said, "No, I want them on the ground. I want to show the people that we're not afraid of yada, yada, yada." And 220 of them died. And I said, "Way to go, Mr. President. You fucked up. You didn't listen to your Joint Chiefs. You didn't listen to the generals on the ground. You decided you knew better. So you got 220 soldiers killed." He said, "Well, tell you what. Let's abandon them right away. Let's get the hell out of Lebanon, and we'll invade the island of Nutmeg the next day in the fucking whore press again. Oh, America. America invades Grenada. Those students were minutes from hanging. The evil Cubans or whoever was in Grenada. Well, they were all had 800 Americans all in a noose and was just ready to snap the door when the Marines landed in the..." No, none of that happened. Reagan wanted to get the disaster in Lebanon off the headlines, so he invaded a country. Gee, it's almost like a Republican thing they do. things are shit, so I'll invade somebody. That way, the idiot Americans, after 9/11, 90% of the people are behind Bush. Why? Because he went to sleep on the job. And his approval ratings shoot to 90%. But anyway, this guy lies saying Osama saw Somalia, which Clinton had nothing to do with. He didn't send anybody to Somalia. But this guy, Investor Whore Daily, decided to lie about it. Instead of quoting Osama, who said he learned in Lebanon that the Americans will up and quit if you kill a few of them. No, he pins it on Clinton, who didn't send those men to Somalia. Mr. CIA Director George Bush sent those men into an Al-Qaeda stronghold without the armor. A bunch of them died. They blamed Clinton. We don't hear so much about Black Hawk Down anymore. What was it, 18 or 20 men died? Because Bush is over 3,000 now. So it's no longer, we don't hear much about Black Hawk Down, because when you compare 3,000 to 18, it kind of makes Clinton look like a genius, and they can't have that. So there's no more talk of Black Hawk Down anymore. Shut up. Interesting the surge, he closes out. Interesting the surge plan that Bush proposes and Democrats condemn as escalation seems to be working. Well, you can say the Democrats condemn the escalation, but Chuck Hagel's not a Democrat, and Susan Collins not a Democrat, and Warner's not a Democrat, and Norm Coleman's not a Democrat, and this is June, no, this ain't June, it's cold. This is January 29th. By February 29th, it's not a leap year, but a month from now, I'll bet there are 10 Republican senators against this war. Hell, there may be. Biden said the other day that there's not 20% of the Senate. Let's say the Republicans got 49. So that's 29 Republicans, according to Biden, 29 Republicans, and there may be some idiot Democrats that are still, yeah, kissy face. He loves this war more than life itself. According to Joe Biden, 30 Republican senators are against this war. Maybe he's guessing, maybe he's lying, maybe he's telling the truth. But Investor Whore Daily has to make out like the Democrats are the only one with some common sense. I think that's true. But the Republicans know that Bush is poison. If they tie themselves to President Poison, they're going to lose in 08. So they're going to be shamed and doing the right damn thing and supporting them troops. All right. Robert Novak, the self-confident Democratic leadership is uninterested in being cut into potential disastrous... What? The self-confident Democratic leadership is uninterested in being cut into potentially disastrous outcomes. Doesn't make any sense. Leadership uninterested in being cut into potentially disastrous outcomes. Doesn't make any sense, but it's Bob Novak. It wants to function as a coordinated branch of government, not a friendly colleague in the spirit of bipartisanship. Oh, yes, after all the reaching across the aisle that Bush has done, and those darn Democrats that just keep slapping his hand. Poor Bush. Bush ignored the issues dear to the conservative base. Well, no, how'd that get in there? The president talked about the goals dear to Democratic hearts, expanded health coverage, energy independence, and federal aid to education. He was reminiscent of President Clinton and sprinkling his speech with small proposals that might be popular. Yet Democrats immediately indicated all such Bush plans have no chance of passage. Boy, I didn't hear that. I heard a bunch of, oh, we want to work with the president. But apparently Novak saw a different speech than the one I didn't see. Something else. We keep falling for the same damn thing again and again. Bush came out and said he wants to reduce emissions on cars, or he wanted to increase the mileage, whatever it is, by 20% by the year 2012. What that means is he's going to masturbate for the next 2 years and say, well, I had a plan. Hey, George, if you want to get something done, why don't you tell us what you're going to do this year? That stuff about we're going to balance the budget by the year 2050, and we're going to cut aids by the year 2200, we're going to do this by the year 3000. No, why don't you do something now? You know, the biggest one, the Clean Air Initiative, whatever he called, the Blue Skies Initiative, whatever it's called, he said they're going to cut coal emissions or whatever the particular thing was, 20% by the year 2015 or something. Well, no, that means they're going to do nothing for the next 7-8 years. And when 2015 gets here, they're going to say, oh, darn, we missed our target. That's all they're doing. They're just wasting time, polluting the air, making money, and with an 8-10-year deadline. And when the 8-10 years is up, they're going to say, whoops, my bad, sorry. Why don't you start now? Screw an 8 or 10 or 20 or 40 or 100-year plan. Do some today. I keep falling for the same crap again and again. Hate that. And here's one. I don't have any idea Maybe the lady's a genius and I can't think on her level. Maybe she's an idiot. Maybe she's a religious quack who loves Bush and can't see the facts. But here's her one-paragraph letter. In December 2005, nearly 70% of adult Iraqis took the trouble to vote in their national elections. Well, actually, they risked their lives, if I have my facts straight. If we are not willing to fight to help decent Iraqis establish democracy, what are we willing to fight for? Well, how about America? I'd fight for America long before I fight to free Fallujah, especially when they're trying to kill our people. Some commentators have pointed out that more Americans have died fighting in Iraq than during the 9/11 attacks. Now here she comes out of left field. They forget that more Americans died on the beaches of Normandy on D-Day than in the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. What? This is Barb Yagley, Troy Mitch. Lady, what's wrong with you? They forget more Americans died on Normandy than the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Saddam didn't attack us. Where do you get this analogy? Japan hit us. We hit him back. Hitler wanted a piece of us. We hit him back. And she wants to know what we're willing to do for Iraq. Well, everything was fine until Bush fucked up. If Saddam had hit us, trust me, we'd all be in Iraq. But no, Saddam was busy. He was busy being contained. In other words, it's okay that more people died in Iraq than on 9/11 because 50 or 60 years ago, more people died in Normandy than in Pearl Harbor. WTF! Where are you going with that, lady? Here's a letter that makes sense. You don't hear many of them on Barkout Radio. Letter writers Randy Turner and Robert Moon recently illustrated one of the most insidious dangers surrounding the Iraq war debate. We should continue the war, they suggest, because Osama has called the United States a paper tiger. In other words, we should keep fighting so we can show bin Laden and the world we are truly powerful. This argument directly serves al-Qaeda's anti-American agenda. When are we going to realize that the 9/11 attacks were planned and executed to provoke exactly this type of response? The goal of the attack was not to destroy the World Trade Center. It was to lure us into a trap that would sap our strength, destroy our international credibility, and cause us to compromise our values. President Bush took the bait, and the trap has been sprung. Peter Schultz, Moorhead, Minnesota. Well put, Peter. But how did Osama know that Bush was going to fuck up this big? If Bush had gone into Afghanistan with 300,000 men, Afghanistan would be secure. Saddam would be contained. We would have lost some men, maybe 500. But no. He decides now we got Afghanistan pretty well controlled. Let's look over here for some trouble. Well, hey, bring them on. We don't think you guys got any fight in you. Oh, we found out they do, Mr. President. You fucked up. You took a shot. You missed. Now we got 3,060 dead soldiers, Mr. Bush.
God wants Bush to be
saw a thing. It was probably in Time Magazine because it's, oh no, it was in Fortune. Can you believe I have a subscription to Fortune Magazine? I don't have time to read Fortune Magazine. I think it was one of those deals where they said, you want to try it for 4 weeks, and if you like it, you can resubscribe. But if you don't like it, it'll just run out. And I think I said, yeah, what? They don't have my credit card. You want to send me 4 issues? Fine. Anyway, so got this out of Fortune Horror Magazine. Oh, and they love Bush at Fortune Magazine. It's a Fortune 500 magazine. I mean, that's what they do. It's big business. Of course they're going to, even though Clinton's tripled the stock market and Bush made it crash, they love Bush. So they wrote a horror article about why the price of oil dropped. And they have all kinds of real fancy, Harvard-educated, white-collar, no-poop-on-my-shoes reasons why the price of oil dropped, meaning you know the real reason. And I'll go up against any sumbitch in the world who wants to argue with me. Let's get in front of a big auditorium full of people. It'll just be me and you and your fancy-ass degrees, and we'll argue about this. But they're talking about, oh, there's this reason and that reason, and oh, there's a whole bunch of reasons over here, and yeah. And let's hear, let's see how I can lead up to the paragraph that pissed me off. One day after something, a $76 barrel on August 7th, government meteorologists downgraded their hurricane forecast and cautioned that a repeat of 2005 was unlikely. They're explaining why the price of gas went down. Not because Bush lost in November. Not because, with the election coming up, greedy sons of bitches decided to ease off their triple monstrous gouging and just go to double monstrous gouging. No, it had nothing to do with it. Another Katrina was unlikely. It said that announcement combined with the end of the summer driving season, which happens every year. God, I hate that. Price of gas went up. It's Memorial Day. Well, who knew? The increased driving made the price go up. Who knew that Memorial Day would be at the end of May again? Who knew that people go on vacation in the summer? My God, who could have predicted? Okay, the end of the driving season and a recalibration of Goldman Sachs Commodity Index. Ah, there you go. Yeah, we all understand what that is, and we all get it. That reduced the weighing of gasoline prompted speculators to head for the exits even faster than they piled in. The switch in Goldman's basket of commodities had been previously announced by the firm, but that didn't stop the conspiracy theorists. Now get that. If you think the price of gas came down for political reasons, you're a tinfoil hat-wearing wacko. What a coincidence, luring Goldman's top dog to take a huge, they put it in capital letters, a huge pay cut by becoming Treasury's top dog. And then Goldman Sachs makes this unexpected decision, serving to dramatically drive down gas prices, said The Gray Matter, a liberal blog. Never heard of them. How liberal can they be if they're covering for Bush? But the grassy knoll crowd didn't bother to crunch the numbers. So if you think the price of gas came down because the oil companies wanted to help Bush, if you think the price of oil came down because Bush lost the election and now the Democrats control Congress, if you think that the price of gas is being manipulated so the greedy sons of bitches can take advantage of having an oil man and one of their own in the White House, you're a grassy knoll guy and you probably shot Kennedy. Only a Kennedy assassin could think that Bush and the oil companies would collude to make a whole shitload of money. Remember, oil was $11 under Clinton, and it hit 80 under Bush. But that's just a coincidence. That's just the driving season. That's just the Katrina. That's just the different factors. The market in Hong Kong and the market in London, and there's all fancy reasons in the world. None of that political stuff makes any bit of it. No difference. None. Lying sons of bitches. Next to that, there's a graphic that says 42% of Americans think low gas prices are a Republican plot. What? Low gas prices, Republican? Well, as it pertains to the upcoming election, sure. But high gas prices is the true Republican plot. Why do you think Bush was put in office? Because if Gore was in office, we'd be driving around in windmill-powered cars now.
Hey, they didn't switch off the phone. Welcome to America. It don't matter who you are. It don't matter what you've done. We just want your money. It makes you wanna scream. The way you get pushed around by every machine and every sick clown. And they smile.
Well, there you had it, show number 105. Hope you found parts of it entertaining. Before I go, I'd like to thank the subscribers and the people who send the occasional check in the mail. Appreciate that. And by the time you're hearing this, we are in Scottsdale, Arizona, going back to the Mayo Clinic, and I would really like to report to you the next radio show that there's no news. I'm kind of thinking that's not the case, but oh, there always is a chance. So let's hope the next radio show starts out with me singing and dancing. But that's probably not going to be the case. But we'll know soon. So this is Bart and K-Drag. Oh, no. Actually, this is Bart and Scottsdale. I'm out of here.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom. Trying to change the system. Take a look at me.
songs that you sent me. The Monkey and the Plywood Violin. I practiced every night, now I'm ready.